It is Friday, July 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump participates in Bastille Day celebrations in France.
He said to reporters on Thursday that when he heard about the significance of this event in both French and American history, he said he could not miss it.
The Chinese government condemns the activism of Nobel Peace Prize laureate Liu Xiaobo. And the new film Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets takes viewers to a galaxy far away. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump was the guest of honor Friday at France's Bastille Day celebrations. It included military bands, flyovers by American jet fighters, and a parade that lasted more than 2 hours to mark the centennial of the U.S. entry into the First World War. I spoke with VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez, who's in Paris.
Well, the French are really hoping that they can influence the president to change his stance on a number of things. We're talking about climate and trade. The two men, President Trump and President Macron, couldn't be more different. And so all odds were stacked against a good visit, but that's not what happened. It ended up being a very positive visit in which the U.S. leader felt very comfortable with the French president, and it seemed mutual. The two men had very good conversations and very good encounters to the point where it almost seemed like they became friends. Mr. Trump changing his tune a bit, saying that something could happen in regard to the climate accord. He made no promises, but in any case, it was more than anyone had heard from him in terms of any flexibility on climate.
Well, another major issue that the two countries are dealing with is the threat of terrorism. And certainly France, in recent years, looking at the attacks in Paris and then also later on in Nice, has had to deal with a lot of this terrible issue. What did the two leaders say about that aspect?
Well, that is the one issue that they very much have in common and that they concentrated on. It was all about finding common ground in what could be otherwise a very difficult relationship. This being the one-year anniversary of the attack in Nice, it was a very timely conversation, a very timely topic. The conversation on Thursday at the Élysée Palace very much focused on counterterrorism efforts, with Mr. Macron saying there is no difference, no gap between the French and the American position. Mr. Trump seemed to agree.
The two leaders attended a dinner at the Eiffel Tower with their wives. This got quite a bit of attention. It was a lovely surrounding, but what transpired at that dinner?
Well, it was a private dinner, and therefore there was no readout on exactly what happened, what the conversation was between the two couples. But it was a big sign of just how well this visit went for both Mr. Trump and Mr. Macron in terms of establishing a personal relationship, almost a friendship, one could say. The two couples, the two first ladies and the two presidents, feeling very comfortable with each other, and then capping what had what both sides considered a very successful day with a fabulous dinner on the second story of the Eiffel Tower. What could be grander than that?
This is an annual event, of course, Bastille Day, the big French national holiday. Why at this point are they also commemorating and making a big deal this year of the U.S. entry into World War I?
Well, France on July 14th marks the storming in 1789. That's when rebels stormed the Bastille prison in Paris, effectively setting off the French Revolution. This year, French leaders coupled those festivities with the 100th anniversary of the U.S. decision to enter the First World War. Now, that happened actually in April of 1917, but the anniversary is the subject of year-long celebrations in France. This was a perfect opportunity for President Macron to invite Mr. Trump, who had not planned to attend the Bastille Day facilities, but he said to reporters on Thursday that when he heard about the significance of this event in both French and American histories, he said he could not miss it.
That's VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez. He's reporting from Paris. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, a lot of talk about Bastille Day. Of course, a lot of people in France and around the world celebrating, and President Trump tweeting out that it was his great honor to be there representing the United States alongside President Emmanuel Macron. Seems, as Luis said, to be a successful trip. Lots of people on social media talking about a medley of Daft Punk songs that were played during Bastille Day. Daft Punk, of course, a very famous electronic band that are French. People saying that Trump watching this didn't seem to know what the band was, who they were, but they said it was a great moment, and they said just it was very cool to hear the medley played by a full marching band. It was pretty neat.
I must say, I don't really know that band either. So.
Yeah, it's, they're more of an electronic band, but one that they have fans all over, and certainly after today with this medley, they have a lot of fans. And a lot of fans for Beyoncé, of course, that goes without saying, but making the announcement, the birth of her two twins, Sir and Rumi. 1 month after she gave birth, she put up a photo holding them on Instagram, and in just 12 hours, that photo already has 7.7 million likes. Beyoncé already has the most liked photo, over 11 million likes, when she announced that she was going to be having twins, and now it looks like this photo, already with over 7 million likes in 12 hours, looks like it's going to break that record.
Just wait till they get a bit older. Okay. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories we're following at this hour. A U.S. judge expands the exempted U.S. travel ban list. Assailants attack police in Old Jerusalem. A teenager is arrested following a spate of acid attacks in London. And dire food insecurity exists in five East African countries that are facing drought. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of Indian astronomers say they have discovered one of the most massive structures that has been found in the universe so far. The astronomers have identified this structure as a previously unknown and incredibly large supercluster of galaxies located some 4 billion light years away near the Pisces constellation. Scientists define a supercluster as a series of galaxies and clusters of galaxies that are bound to each other by gravity. A supercluster can consist of tens of thousands of galaxies. This supercluster was named in honor of Saraswati, the Hindu goddess of knowledge, music, arts, wisdom, and learning. The scientists say their newly discovered giant supercluster extends over 600 million light years across and may have the mass of over 20 million billion suns. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the UN Human Rights Office condemns the Venezuelan government security forces. A Chinese official said the awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize to dissident Liu Xiaobo in 2010 was blasphemy. Liu, one of China's best-known political prisoners, died Thursday at age 61 following a battle with liver cancer. The Nobel laureate spent his last 8 years as a prisoner of conscience. He died at a hospital in Shenyang, China, where he had been moved in the final stage of his illness. Foreign Ministry spokesman Gong Shuang condemned Liu's Nobel Peace Prize, calling it an insult to the memory of Alfred Nobel, the Swedish inventor and philanthropist for whom the award is named. He said, according to the wishes of Mr. Nobel, the Peace Prize should be awarded to people who promote harmony among nations, unity, promote friendship, and promote peace projects. Liu Xiaobo is a criminal who was put on trial by China's laws. His actions and his deeds betray what the Nobel Peace Prize represents. U.S. lawmakers had a different view on Liu's treatment and death. U.S. Republican Senator John McCain blamed the Chinese government.
It's a tragedy. It's the ruling clique in Beijing is responsible for his death, and it's another in a list of outrages that I believe clearly indicate that the regime ruling China is anti-democratic.
Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen spoke of Liu's commitment to freedom.
certainly his willingness to fight for freedom and injustice in China is an example to the entire world, and will be missed not just by the Chinese people, but by everyone here who believes that every individual is entitled to freedom, to opportunity, to a future where they can do what they want to do and speak as they want to speak.
VOA Asia's Jim Stevenson spoke with Andrew Nathan, a political science professor at Columbia University, about the impact of Liu Xiaobo's death.
I think it's a blow to China's prestige in the West, but I don't think it's going to have any impact on the Chinese regime. Liu Xiaobo is not really well known inside of China, and I suppose that the information about his illness and his death is not very widely known in China either. So I guess the regime will just continue on to the upcoming 19th Party Congress without any disturbance. So they want to show themselves to be tough and firm. They want to show that to their domestic audience and to the international audience as well. And I guess they've showed it.
Is there a repercussion for China with Liu's passing and the fact that China seemed to show very little compassion for his care and allowing him to leave the country?
I don't think there's going to be any substantial international repercussion. Everybody's going to deplore, foreign governments have expressed different, you know, with different degrees of diplomatic language that they deplore the fact that Liu Xiaobo wasn't, you know, that his cancer wasn't caught earlier and that he wasn't allowed to get the medical care overseas that he expressed he wanted to have. So the governments have said things. The U.S. government has issued a statement already, and I think the Norwegian government has issued a statement. But these statements, that's the end of it, I think. The statements are in varying degrees mild and diplomatic, and there won't be any punishment after that for the Chinese government.
There is concern, of course, for his wife and other family members who remain in China. Will there be any possibility that at some point they may be able to leave?
I guess that it is possible that the government will allow the wife and her brother, those are the people involved, to leave. They've expressed a desire to, I don't know now whether they want to leave, but in the past they've expressed that desire, and I think she may still want to leave. And I think it's possible that the government will let her leave, because when the Chinese government allows a dissident to leave, that person goes into exile and becomes much less influential. That's been the experience before. They're cut off from the public in China, which was already the case with Liu Xia, but they also stop being such a sort of sore case for the international community. There's a sense in which their situation has been solved. They've been freed. So they come overseas and they have a hard time usually adjusting and finding a role overseas. So exile, from the point of view of Beijing, is not that bad a thing. And so they may very well let her go.
Are there effective ways that human rights groups can carry on Liu Xiaobo's banner, if you will, beyond his passing?
He said himself in one of his writings how important it is for people inside China who are struggling for human rights, human dignity, to hear the voice of support from overseas, even though that voice of support from overseas is just a voice and it's just moral support. I think that the human rights groups overseas can't really make anything happen in China, but they can. It's amazing but true that Chinese people keep trying, small numbers but brave people keep trying to push the ideas of justice and human dignity in China. So I'm sure that they will continue to be Chinese doing that, and it's important for the outside world to continue to express respect and support for those people.
Andrew Nathan, professor of political science at Columbia, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Liu Xiaobo is survived by a son and his wife of 21 years, Liu Xia. The UN Human Rights Office has condemned the repressive and often deadly tactics employed by Venezuelan government security forces against peaceful protesters. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since April 1st, the United Nations says some 90 people have died and more than 1,500 others injured while protesting the continued rule of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and economic conditions in the country. The UN Human Rights Office is concerned that plans by opposition groups to hold a public hearing Sunday on Maduro's intention to rewrite the constitution could turn violent. Human Rights Office spokeswoman Liz Throssell is urging the government to make sure security personnel do not use excessive force against demonstrators as they have in the past.
We've received accounts from several sources that some members of the Venezuelan security forces have used repressive tactics, intimidating and instilling fear to try to deter people from demonstrating. In addition, thousands of demonstrators are reported to have been arbitrarily detained, and we're very concerned that more than 450 civilians have reportedly been brought before military tribunals.
Throssell says civilians accused of a crime or an illegal act should appear before a civilian court, and all those who have been arbitrarily detained should be released. In the meantime, the UN Refugee Agency says asylum applications by Venezuelans are soaring. So far this year, it says more than 52,000 people have applied. That is twice as many as last year. The UNHCR says the United States, Brazil, and Argentina are the most desired destinations by asylum seekers. The agency says people who are rejected as refugees should not be sent back to Venezuela against their will because of instability in the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition, a new film from French director Luc Besson, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, opens this month. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the futuristic sci-fi film marries overwhelming visuals and strong acting from its female lead to transport viewers to a distant galaxy.
It's the 28th century, and Major Valerian, played by Dane DeHaan, and Laureline, his partner, played by Cara Delevingne, are special operatives hoping to save the city Alpha from a mysterious dark force that aims to destroy it and the universe. Alpha is a city made up of a thousand planets where alien species and humans have all learned to work together for everyone's benefit.
Welcome to Alpha. The city of a thousand planets, where for hundreds of years every species has shared their knowledge and their intelligence with each other. It's paradise.
The film is based on a 1967 French comic series, Valerian and Laureline, which a young Luc Besson devoured as a child. Besson, who directed 2014's Lucy and another futuristic space opera, The Fifth Element, said he had to quiet his younger self to direct this movie.
Even if this child bring you there, now it's a new deal. You're not 10 years old anymore. you have experience in life. You have to reorganize your way of thinking and your way of working. So I just hope that this little 10-year-old boy is just proud of the film.
Dane DeHaan says that he shared Besson's enthusiasm for the story and was amazed to get the part of Major Valerian.
We were eating some eggs, and he was like, "Hey, I'm making the movie I've wanted to make my entire life, and I want you to star in it." And it was so, it was so overwhelming and kind of like surreal. I didn't even really understand what was happening. And he sent me the script 2 hours later, and I read it, and I called him, and I was like, "I love this." And I remember him saying like, "Oh, I'm so happy, I'm so happy."
British fashion model Cara Delevingne says that working with Besson was both overwhelming and amazing as an actor.
It's completely overwhelming, but at the same time, when you're working with Luke, who's wanted to do this project since he was a kid, he knows every character, every situation, every environment so well that when he describes it, it's almost like you're there. So he was like the best tour guide of, you know, Alpha and the universe as anyone could have.
Besson says that his exhaustive knowledge of the storylines helped him take the actors to places that they could only imagine because the environments were inserted later in post-production.
It's more like the actors goes for a journey to the unknown, and I am Google Earth. So they can refer to me, should I take right or should I take left?
You should take left.
You know, I'm just like, it's not, I'm the reference in a way. I am like, they want to write a letter and I am the dictionary.
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets also stars Clive Owen as General Arun Phillitt, Valerian and Laureline's commanding officer. Musician Herbie Hancock stars as Alpha's defense minister, while singer Rihanna plays Bubble, a shape-shifting, exotic entertainer. And John Goodman lends his voice to Egon Cyrus, a Jabba the Hutt kind of intergalactic gangster. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is rated PG-13 for sci-fi violence and action and suggestive material with some brief language. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Qatar have signed a Memorandum of Understanding, laying out a series of steps aimed at stopping the flow of financial support to terrorist groups and at intensifying the two countries' global counterterrorism activities. At a press briefing in Doha, alongside of Qatari Foreign Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the bilateral agreement was the result of weeks of intensive discussions in that it reinvigorates the spirit of the Riyadh summit. That Arab-Islamic-American summit took place in May and focused on the necessity for Muslim leaders to unite to drive out terrorism from their midst and crush the ideology that supports it. Among the summit's initiatives was the inauguration in Riyadh of the Global Center for Combating Extremist Ideology to monitor and counter terrorist messaging. Secretary Tillerson applauded the Emir of Qatar for being the first to respond to President Donald Trump's call to combat terrorist financing. The signing of the bilateral agreement between the U.S. and Qatar comes in the midst of a continuing diplomatic crisis between Qatar and a number of Gulf region countries over claims that Qatar supports terrorism and is too close to Iran. Qatar has refused to accede to a series of demands presented by the countries, and the impasse, as well as the blockade, continues. The United States supports the efforts of the Emir of Kuwait, who is acting as a mediator in the conflict. Secretary Tillerson has emphasized that the United States and its allies and partners are stronger when they are working together towards one goal, which we all agree is stopping terrorism and countering extremism. Speaking about bilateral agreement between the U.S. and Qatar, Secretary Tillerson said, "Together, the United States and Qatar will do more to track down terrorist funding sources. We'll do more to collaborate and share information, and we'll do more to keep the region and our homeland safe." Mr. Tillerson was clear that terrorism is the great challenge facing the region and the world. The United States, he said, has one goal: drive terrorism off the face of the earth. Adding, in President Trump's words, that every country in the region has an absolute duty to ensure that terrorists find no sanctuary on their soil.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.